I'm Heather, and this is the Living with Addiction podcast, where I show you how you have more power than you realize when it comes to helping yourself and your child that's struggling with addiction. All right. Hello, everybody. So today I'm excited that I have another guest. My guest name is Jody Schilling, and she is also a life coach. She was certified through the Life Coach School, which is the same place that I got my certification. And we have similar backgrounds that caused us to turn to coaching for help. And it really helped us both overcome what we were dealing with related to our kids and our families and ourselves. So then we both decided to become certified coaches so that we could help other families dealing with similar issues. And I actually met Jody because she was one of my first clients. So I got to know her really well. And I came to really just love and respect her as a mom. And the way that she approaches her family and the healing that she shares with the world as a coach. And so she's a family crisis coach focused on families dealing with mental health issues. So I'm really excited to share her story with you today because I think that we need more messages of hope. We need more parents that are sharing their story that life can be better, even if our kids aren't sober or we're having other crises in our family. You know, we still have ups and downs, but we can still have stability and joy in our lives. So, Jody, can you tell us a little bit about your background, like what you've dealt with in your family and, you know, how, you know, coaching has helped you with that?
Yes, I will. And thank you so much for having me, Heather. I'm really excited to be here today. My story really, I have four kids. And so it really starts with my kids having diagnosis pretty early on. There was some controversy even at the time about having diagnosis of bipolar disorder at age five for one of my kids, for example. And I also we have, as a family, experienced autism and really significant anxiety, debilitating anxiety, depression, even suicidality over the years. And so with the four kids and having different diagnoses with each of the kids, and then having kids who were more neurotypical and not having the mental health part. And of course, trying to stay married through all of that. Yeah. We just as a family seemed to, for a long time, it seemed that there was just one crisis after another that that we were dealing with as a family. And I just really look back on that time and I tell a different story now than I used to tell about it after coaching. Coaching really helped me just decide that thinking of our family as being kind of having to be victimized, I guess, by having crisis after crisis or being impacted by that wasn't a story that served me very well. So coaching really helped me change that story around. And it not only helped me see that we were really resilient as a family while we were going through all of that, when I didn't think we were doing well at all. Yeah. But that then it kind of empowered me to then deal with the ongoing, like you said, we continue to have our ups and downs and we can't control when the next crisis hits, but I'm just much more, I feel equipped to, to handle going forward. So, and that just like you said, that complete kind of empowerment. And I know that word is used a lot, but it really was an empowerment change for me. So to be able to feel like I was empowered, then that's when I felt like I have to share this with all the other moms who have had suffered like we did.
Right.
And I felt so compelled to teach it and share it with everyone else. Like every mom needs to go, that's going through any struggle with their kids, you know, suffering and in pain, needs to know these tools and be able to, you know, like you said, experience some joy is still possible, even as we're going through life. So hard things in life. Yeah.
Yeah. And life just never stops throwing curveballs at us. And so once we have kind of, you know, learn to use these tools in our life, even though more curveballs keep coming, we can apply these same things to all of these issues that come up. So you're definitely an example of all of these different things that are going on in your family. And I think that, you know, I've talked about some my before and after in a couple of different episodes on my podcast. And, you know, there's like each one of those issues that you mentioned could create a lot of pressure on their own, but you're dealing with all of them, you know, intermittently, or maybe even sometimes all at once. And you've used coaching to help you manage that. So can you talk a little bit about the before and after, like some of the specific changes that you, you know, like kind of how you approached it before and how you would approach it now?
Right. I think back when I was dealing with, well, I'll just share an example. If one of my kids, for example, needed to be hospitalized, that was really one of the big kind of events when you have a child that has to have inpatient care. Mm-hmm. And I think that to compare the before and after, the way that I handled it then, I would just be in what we would call survival mode or crisis mode.
Yeah.
But I would be barely functioning. And I think the reason that I would be in this barely functioning mode was because I was fighting the reality. I was still trying to, you know, like I was still trying to control everything. And I thought kind of in, it was a thinking error at the time, which I wasn't aware of, but I really thought that this was the solution, you know, like get this perfect, like get this, you know, to advocate at the hospital, get this treatment right, you know? And so I really would have this almost unrealistic expectation that this hospitalization was going to solve the problem.
Yes.
And so I was just, so I think there was those two things. It was a thinking error that I didn't know. I just wasn't aware that I was fighting reality so hard and having that expectation, but then also that survival mode kind of way of being was, it was all encompassing of my emotional energy. And I didn't have any sense of taking care of myself at all, of my mental health and my physical health or anything like that. I was so, like, I look back and think, how did I actually do that without, like how that must have had such an impact on my body and my brain, because I really didn't. I just remember being like sometimes I didn't remember the last time I'd eaten or, you know, and I didn't sleep in the hospital at all. I'd be in the waiting room for hours and I wouldn't sleep. And, you know, just, and so I think that after is that we've had hospitalizations since I got coaching, we've had other crises come up that I now have this sense of this is, I'm not fighting reality, that this is, I can be very factual about what's happening. I can, as we say, check the facts and, you know, and just be like, okay, this is right now, this is what I'm experiencing. I can be much more aware of my own emotions and my own physical and emotional needs. And I can just come at the situation kind of from my best self under the circumstances. You know, I can show up in a way that is, you know, it's still crisis mode. I'm still just saying, okay, I'm ordering pizza, you know, for the kids or whatever, but I'm doing it from a place that's much more calm and less frantic and just more intentional, even though it's still a crisis happening. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, just from working with you, one of the things that I was able to witness is that even when you were going through a hard time, you had that calm clarity and you approached everything from love instead of fear. And I think that that's a huge transition to move into. Like, it's a shift that you can feel within yourself when you make it, and you have more confidence in your decisions. And so it was always impressive to watch that in action with you, that you were able to approach situations with all of that. And I think that it makes a huge difference in how it feels for your family too.
Definitely, definitely. And I'm glad you bring up the idea of love being kind of the driver in any situation. I think when we show up, I always think, you know, what would love do? I love to ask myself that question. And think, okay, because then you can be loving to the child who's suffering the most, and you can be loving to the rest of the family and your husband or your partner, and you can be loving to yourself. And I think that's the other after that I really had, was that there's enough love to go around for everyone. And that was a difference for me for sure.
And it just feels so different than when you're approaching everything from fear. And, but I think that it takes some confidence in yourself, you know, that has to be built through working through things that were when to shift into doing things from that love approach. But it's really amazing when it starts to come together and you can experience the difference in just even your interaction, the energy between you and your kids and your family, and the compassion that you can have for yourself as well.
For sure.
So something that I haven't shared much about, but I know is something that most families who have more than one child face, is that, you know, you get focused on just one child, whoever is currently in crisis, and you feel like your other kids are falling through the cracks, or you're failing as a mom, which is just another pressure on top of an already, you know, a pressure cooker situation. So how do you deal with that now so that you feel better, you know, or as good as possible about how you show up as a mom now?
Yeah. I think that is such a big, that with the moms that I work with, particularly because my focus is on families, and the family kind of takes on a role. Everybody in the family takes on a role, I think, in a crisis. And so I think the mom feels like her role is to take care of everybody. And if there is one particular family member that's really in the throes of the biggest crisis, the challenge is then how to like make sure that you're not neglecting the rest of the family. That's the biggest thing on our mind as a mom trying to do all that. And so it's, you're kind of in an impossible situation in some ways to you feel like you're at your capacity emotionally to just cope with what the situation is. So you don't feel like you have enough. It is a definite, this kind of scarcity place. And what I've learned and what I do now is I recognize that each person has their role and that they're going to cope in their own way, and that that's okay in the crisis situation. It's okay that some of the kids will withdraw and some will need to interact more. And just knowing that each of the kids has their own needs, and that I, in any given moment, can be aware of that. And even, I think the idea that like, I can't be, just like when the kids were little and we weren't in a crisis, I couldn't hold all four of them at once physically in my arms. I mean, not well anyway, but I could still like have eye contact with one across the room while I was feeding one. And, you know, I could still make that connection in a way that they still knew that I love them. And there's just a mentality about being in a crisis as a family, that you know that it's temporary or that it's cyclical. And so it's also knowing that, it's also knowing that this is the really hard time and we're all dealing with it in our own way. And I still can connect with everybody right now. Zach needs me the most, but then, you know, in 2 hours I can connect with Janelle and I am texting with Kylie or whatever, you know, each of them has a way to connect with me, and it's different for each of them. And that's okay. And so yes, those are some of the ways that it helps me right now anyway.
And I think the biggest one that you mentioned was just keeping in mind that this is temporary, because when we're in crisis mode, it feels like this is never going to end. The pressure is never going to let up. And I think just even the thought that it's going to last forever, even with when we feel like a negative emotion, that thought that it's going to last forever makes it even that much more painful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a great point, or something really good to remember, that this is temporary. It's not going to last forever. And so also this, you know, like you mentioned, impacts our marriage as well, which I do have experience with. And so, you know, it was hard for me for a long time, like you mentioned, being at your maximum emotional capacity, because when you didn't have a way to deal with things, and when I didn't really have a way to deal or process, I was just very numb and I wanted to be left alone. On one hand, I really wanted to go be a good wife, but on the other hand, and I wanted that connection, but I didn't have the emotional capacity to create that for myself. And so I would always feel guilty about that too, that I'm dealing with so much that I can't go be a good wife, even though I want to. So how have you, you know, changed your approach as far as, you know, showing up as the wife you want to be as well?
Yes. I think that when I think about my marriage and the kind of the journey that we've been on with going through all of these different things as a family, and then thinking about my relationship with my husband as kind of a part of that, but also separate. And I think that recognizing that there's a time for our marriage to take a priority, and then there's a time for the family situation to be the priority, and to be able to have, to be able to hold both of those, and to be able to say, you know, I don't have to neglect one at the expense of the other, or focus on one at the expense of the other, that I can have both, but that it's going to feel different at different times. Mm-hmm. And I think the nature of relationships, the thought that relationships change and that's okay, has really helped me with my marriage, because we got married very young and we went right into crisis mode with kids. And we had a lot through those times, I will tell you, we had a lot of times where we really disagreed about parenting. Mm. And especially with kids who struggle with mental health, sometimes, and I don't mean to characterize men in general this way, but female brains and men, male brains are different. Right. And so males tend to be very like, fix the problem now, just, you know, whatever, like tell her to toughen up, or tell him to, you know, like just take care of, it's like very cut and dry, black and white kind of approach. And also I think for us as moms, a lot of us will be very kind of research oriented, and we'll have a lot of information. And so then that also can make, at least in my situation, my husband, I think, often felt like, well, you're the expert on it. You know, you just take it on because you know all the rest of, you know, all that information. And so that kind of gave him a way to step back. Mm. And so what I had to learn to do, and what really has helped us in our marriage, was for me to let him be who he was, and to let him, you know, have his way of approaching it, and to then like just take the time when it was the right time to give information in a way that he could receive it. Yes. But if he couldn't, to just to continue to show up for the way I could show up with the kids and in the situation or whatever. And I also kind of had to accept the idea that our marriage might not survive. I know that sounds really like probably surprising to think, how do you, when you ask, you know, what's a coping skill for your marriage, to say it might not survive is actually a coping skill. But it's kind of like the same thing of going to the worst case scenario about any situation. Then it's like, I'm not in fear of that happening. I'm like, well, it's possible. We've been through a lot, and that would make sense if that, you know, if we didn't, and I would deal with that if that happened.
Yeah.
Is that what I want? no, that isn't what I want. So then I can be just having that awareness that I want to be aware that where there's an impact on marriages when families go through really hard things. And I can be aware of that. And then I can show up in the best I can. So.
Yeah. And I think another good thing to remember is that if you are having problems in your marriage or in your life because of whatever crisis you're dealing with, whether it be addiction or anything else, that there were things there before. It's just that this crisis is shining a spotlight on them. And so it's really an opportunity to grow and heal and learn together instead of making the other person the enemy. Like you said, accepting your husband's style of doing things, how he approached things. And I had to work on that too. And it definitely gave my husband and I much better communication. Like we became stellar communicators. But I think just really seeing that it wasn't a, you know, like the fault of addiction and blaming everything on that, because if you do, then you miss the opportunity to work on the things that could really create a much closer marriage, a much better, you know, relationship with your family and everyone else in your life. And I think that that's the big before and after too, that we both experienced, is learning by working on ourselves and dealing with what addiction was showing us really overall gave us a better quality of life than we even had before.
Absolutely. I would absolutely agree. And I will also add that I think when our marriage actually got better after going through all of these kinds of things together, it wasn't that it got better because we bonded over the crisis as much, but it was more that we recognized that we stayed in our relationship kind of separate from that. Like we still kept our time together kind of sacred. You know, we kind of still made sure that we didn't let the crisis take over in the sense of like impacting our relationship that much. So it's a tricky thing to be able to accept in a lot of ways that the crisis does have an impact on the family, but then to also hold that relationship, you know, as solid as you can hold it, you know. So that's also something I think that I recognize, because there were definitely times when I think back before coaching where I was totally ready to say, this is way too hard. And, you know, just kind of like letting everything go, like the marriage, everything, just kind of like wanting to give power to whatever the crisis was.
Yes. Yeah. And I just want to add, like, I am divorced, but it didn't have anything to do with my daughter's addiction. But we did go through a period of where our marriage did get closer because we were working on things because of the pressure that her addiction put on it. It just ended up in the long run that we just were not compatible, but we were still able to leave our marriage like being good friends and never fighting and still really supporting and respecting each other, which is something that all of this work gave both of us. So even if things don't work out the way we want them to, we can still leave a situation gracefully, you know, just another way that these tools help us through our life. So I also want to talk about, you know, coaching is definitely meant to help us have a lot more better days, more tools to handle things with, a higher quality of life. But there's sometimes just those days that, you know, they're just going to be bad days. And what do you do for yourself on those days that are just really bad?
Yeah, I'm really glad you're mentioning this, because I do think that there's kind of a mentality sometimes where we get the coaching tools and we apply them, and then we're so excited to share them. I know I do this with my clients too, where I want to share them. And it's almost like this big rosy picture. Like once you understand these tools and you use them, then, you know, you don't have those really bad days. And I definitely have had them and had, I would say, more of them recently, actually. And what I do, I honestly, I mean, on the worst of the days, because I've learned to allow emotion, I used to try to suppress emotion, and I didn't really let myself feel, cry, you know, cry and scream and just really express whatever I was feeling, even if it was not pretty. And now I really let myself do that. And I personally, I like to be like, I like to go for a drive sometimes and do it safely, but just, you know, listen to music and recognize that I need to let these emotions process through. Mm-hmm. And so for me to go on a drive all by myself and listen to music and just let myself cry and cry, just bawling. Yeah. sometimes I have to pull over because of the tears, but so I can see, but really, I mean, just that's it. I mean, I will cry hard on the bad days. And there's something cleansing about it. I used to think that it was not okay to do that. It felt like I was kind of out of control.
Yes.
But I have learned that crying is really an important part of processing emotion for me. And so I let myself do that. I also, on the really bad days, I give notice to people that in my family, I tell them, you guys, it's a bad day. It's a rough one. I'm not, you know, like dinner's on your own. I'm not going to be as available. I need to get through something right now. It's a bad day. And so my family has learned that. And I think that that's so much better than trying to pretend that I'm and white knuckle it through it. And, you know, I end up, they ask me for what's for dinner and I explode.
Right.
It's better to tell them ahead of time. I'm, you know, you're totally on your own. So those are a couple ways that I do that, but I definitely do a lot of models. I definitely journal and get my thoughts out on paper. And I just, you know, whether I wake up having a bad day or something happens midday and I know that I need to process, I just have that awareness now. So I take some kind of intentional actions.
Yes. Yeah. And I like that you put your family on notice and you don't people please and lie, which, you know, leads to more resentment, and that your family has learned to just allow you to have those days. I think that that's a huge lesson that we learned in coaching, is that we have to allow people to feel how they feel, as long as their feelings aren't, you know, violent or something, but just allowing people to have a bad day. I have been doing that myself more lately, like really just saying, like, I'm not going to pretend I'm okay right now because I'm not.
Yes.
And it's going to lead to discomfort. Like, why am I going to absorb all of the discomfort so that people around me don't have to be uncomfortable? But that's what I used to do. And now I'm like, I'm sorry, but I just can't say that I'm okay right now because I'm not. Mm-hmm. And there's something very freeing in that I, you know, am putting everybody on notice that I need to have my feelings right now.
Yes.
And I do cry more than I ever did before. And I did feel exactly like you said, when I would cry before, it felt very out of control for me. And I think that it does feel very cleansing now. And I don't have the fear that if I cry, I'll never be able to stop anymore. I think that was part of it before too. I know that I can cry for a few hours and then move on with my day. And I also need like really simple things on those days. Like, I listen to binaural beats, or there's like bilateral stimulation music that you can find on YouTube. And that really just helps get my brain back like in focus, and kind of helps keep me calm. Because there's sometimes I feel like I do love to meditate and do energy work and stuff, but I can't, like, I need something to get me there sometimes even. And so having things like that to fall on, there's tons of guided meditations on YouTube. And, you know, like, I do a lot of writing and models like you talked about as well. But I think that having just some really simple go-to rituals,
yes,
that makes it so easy. Because it's almost like, like when I'm going to go walk at my favorite place, it's like I can breathe when I get in the car to go there to walk. It's like my body just knows what's about to happen. And yes. I think that that's really important to start those rituals when we're in a good space and keep them going no matter what, because then it's almost like you just, before you even know it, you're in the car driving to the place that you need to be.
Yes. Yes. I didn't say this, but I also feel like on my bad days, I try to make sure that I nourish myself in a way that, and so I remember, and I do have this thought now that I didn't have in my before coaching and, you know, now in my after model, but I give myself that self-compassion that is, you know, just to remember I need water. I need to go on my walk. Like I normally try to walk every day. And so this isn't the day to not do my walk, you know?
Yes.
So if I'm going to reduce my day, I'm going to reduce it down to the things that are nurturing and compassionate to myself.
Yes.
And I'm going to, if I'm going to eliminate anything, it's going to be things that I'm doing for other people or things that are going to add more stress or pressure to myself. So that's another approach that I've noticed. It's funny that sometimes we don't recognize it until someone else asks us, you know? So I'm glad you're actually asking me this because it's helping me reflect that I do have a new kind of protocol for handling really bad days that I didn't have before. So.
Yeah. And I think that it is so easy to get excited and talk about how much better things are because it's this amazing feeling like, oh my God, I actually have control over my life and I know what to focus on and things are so much better. But then even I think as we're going through learning the process, like we have so many great days, we're on this pink cloud. So then when we come back down a little bit, we even question it ourselves. And, you know, I know that a lot of coaches go through that is like, oh, well, what am I doing wrong that things aren't great all the time? And then it's realizing that there are situations where we do choose. I wouldn't want to choose happy thoughts about this situation. I do see my choice and I am choosing not to be happy right now. I'm choosing to grieve this. I'm choosing to own that this sucks.
Yes.
So there's even a freedom in owning those choices.
For sure. For sure.
So, I guess that's all the questions I have. Is there anything that you want to, that we didn't cover, that you want to offer, anything final you want to say?
I would just add, we did touch on it a little bit, but I really would add that I think the biggest mind shift change that I think is the most useful for moms who see their kids suffering and in pain, whether it's with their mental health or addiction. I've also experienced addiction with one of my kids as well. And I think the biggest mind shift for me was that acceptance. And I know that it's such a hard one, you know, to say, how can we really say that we want to accept that our child is in pain? You know, it just, it's so counterintuitive as a mom, because we're just wired to protect and nurture them and keep them out of pain and keep them safe. And so accepting that pain is part of life. And then really from there saying, okay, this is what is happening right now. Like this is a factual thing, but how do I show up from there? You know, from here, like knowing this is happening, I can still have some agency over the way I show up to it. And that's what just was the biggest thing for me, just to accept, and then from there show up with love. That's what we can do.
Yes, I totally agree with you. And it does feel wrong to accept this reality, but you know, I'm going through something else right now, and I'm going through the same process I went through when I learned about my daughter's addiction. Like, and so at least right now I can say when I'm ready to see things differently, I know what I need to do. But I'm also holding space for myself that this feels shitty right now. And I'm just going to allow that for now.
Yes.
But I feel so lucky that I know this, and I'm like, okay, I have the skills that I need when I'm ready. And acceptance is one of them because I'm feeling very resistant, and that resistance causes us more pain. So I'm glad that you brought that up, because acceptance is the key, and it doesn't mean that we agree with it or right. that it's what we want, but it just means we're going to work with what we have to work with instead of working against it. So I think that's a great point. So if anybody wants to get in touch with you, and I will put this in the show notes as well, but how do people find you?
There's a couple of ways. I think the easiest is just my website, because everything is accessible from there. But right now it's reallifelifecoach.com. And I have my podcast there. The Family Crisis Podcast is my podcast that I started about the same time I think you started yours.
Yeah.
And then there's also some resources there. And if moms would want to work with me, there's a coaching page that talks about my coaching program also. So everything's on the website.
Okay, good. And I will put that in the show notes so that people know exactly where to go look. And I really appreciate your time today. I think that this was great information, you know, especially there's some things that I can't speak to, like, you know, what it's like dealing with other kids. And I know that there's families that are listening that have other kids, and they've, you know, are feeling the way that you felt before too. So I really appreciate you being here today, and I will be back next week with another topic. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you want to learn more about my work, go to heatherrosscoaching.com. If you want to help other parents who are struggling with a child's addiction, you can do it two different ways. First, you can share the podcast with them directly, or you can share it on your social media. Second, you can leave a review. Talk to you next week.